Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on this morning's magazine, we'll take a look back at 2019 at what happened with Boulder City Council, with Ros Brown, who's been covering events at the Boulder City Council for KGNU. Stay tuned for a year in review coming up after headlines. Then some breaking news this morning in the Colorado Independent. They've just published an investigation into how CU regions passed over more experienced and prominent applicants when picking Mark Kennedy as president of the university. We'll hear from you, the listener, on the comment line. Then after headlines from the BBC at the bottom of the hour, it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, we'll get an end of year and end of decade recap of top science stories. At 9 o'clock, it is Alan Watts running out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The City of Denver on Monday lodged an appeal for a ruling that declared the city's camping ban unconstitutional. Last week, a Denver court ruled in a case in which Jerry Burton was ticketed for violating the city's camping ban at an encampment that's been known as Jerryville. This is in the Curtis Park area of Denver. In making their decision, the judge relied upon a recent case from a federal appeals court that said that as long as there is no option for sleeping indoors, the government cannot criminalize homeless people for sleeping outdoors on public property on the false premise that they had a choice in the matter. The judge ruled that Denver's ban amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. A Denver City spokesperson told the Denver Post that city attorneys filed an appeal on Monday morning against that ruling. The city has banned outdoor camping since 2012, but the Denver Post reports that citations and arrests are relatively rare. Voters rejected a measure last May that would have overturned the ban. Beginning tomorrow, employees who are injured on the job but whose employers do not have insurance will now have access to a state-run fund. Colorado Politics reports that the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment's Division of Workers' Compensation will accept applications for financial aid for injuries that occur after January 1st. Those applications must be accompanied by a final order from a judge that shows entitlement to compensation benefits. The Colorado Uninsured Employer Fund will pay all reasonable and necessary unpaid past due medical bills. And once the fund runs out of money, it will close to new applicants. Xcel Energy have been given permission for a rate increase for Colorado customers in 2020, albeit a smaller increase than they had initially requested. The Denver Post reports that the Public Utilities Commission has approved a $41.5 million annual electric rate increase for Xcel in Colorado. The utility had originally requested $158 million as an increase. That increase will now add an estimated $1.03 to a monthly residential bill and $1.95 a month for small commercial customers. The town of Erie has been the victim of a financial fraud, resulting in the loss of more than $1 million to a scammer. The Daily Camera reports that the town had sent just over $1 million to an unknown person that claimed to be representing a construction company that the town had hired to build the Erie Parkway Bridge. In an email sent on Monday, Erie Town Administrator Malcolm Fleming said that the town had sent money to somebody who was requesting a change in the form of payment for the construction work done on the bridge, but they were unaware that the person was not in fact working for SEMA Construction Inc. That's the primary contractor for the work. According to town staff, two separate payments totaling more than $1 million were sent to an account that was not authorised by SEMA. On November 5th, the town's bank notified town staff of potential fraud. When the town staff contacted SEMA, the contractor, regarding the payments, the company stated that they had not in fact received the money, and they confirmed that they did not request a change in the payment method. In the forecast for this last day of 2019, expect sunny skies around the Front Range, highs in the mid-40s. Overnight, it'll be mostly clear but windy as well. And tomorrow, there might be some moisture as we kick off 2020. Breezy in the morning, Chance of rain before around 11 o'clock and then a slight chance of a rain snow mix for New Year's night. But the rest of the week looks like we'll have mostly sunny skies, highs close to 40 degrees. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock and it is the last day of 2019. And as we like to do at this time of the year, we're going to take a look at what has happened locally in 2019. And joining us now, we have Roz Brown, who has tirelessly covered Boulder City Council and County Commissioner meetings throughout the entire year for you, the listeners, so we get those reports on a Wednesday morning. First of all, Roz, thank you so much. I know how much work that is to sit through those meetings and how much effort you put in. So thank you, first of all.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to do this work for KGNU and make sure that there's another voice to reflect what is going on in our government, our local government.
Well, as we do reflect on what's happened in the past year, what were some of the big decisions, some of the big maybe dramas that unfolded, certainly in the public comment section? What were some of the big stories that really stick out for you in 2019?
Well, yes, it's like, you know, everybody says Boulder's the biggest little city, and we certainly affirm that saying sometimes. One surprise, I think, in early January was the resignation of Councilmember Jill Grano, who stepped down after just a year on council to work for Representative Jonah Goose. Nobody saw that coming, but it left an open seat on council for 11 months, which is quite unusual. They were operating with just 8 members instead of 9 for nearly a year until the election last month, when newcomers Rachel Friend, Junie Joseph, Adam Swetlick, and Mark Wallach were elected, and they joined Aaron Brockett and Bob Yates, who were reelected by voters to second terms. Okay, so that was unusual, yeah, but also pretty tame. I would say, having lived in Boulder for more than 4 decades now, one of the most jarring issues that ended up, as you say, creating a lot of drama and having multiple ramifications were accusations of racism against the police department. And that started in March, so early on, when an African-American student from the Naropa Institute was approached by an officer who he was picking up trash in his yard near downtown, but the officer in the encounter suggested that he had doubts where the student belong there. And the officer called for backup, and several other officers and police cars responded. And it all ended peacefully, but enraged the community because, of course, of the similar incidents across the U.S. that have led to young black men being killed by police officers who were innocent.
And, of course, accusations over previous years and investigations and reports that showed there is racial bias in the police department.
Exactly. Even a study that was done and brought to the city council that showed, yes, there was bias toward people of color in Boulder. And so there were marches and protests, and then another incident involving a black man named Sammy Lawrence, a regular attendee at council meetings. Well, that was all escalating this concern, and it led to a community task force being appointed, which meant monthly with police officers, and they revised what is called the city's police task force of community members, and they established some new oversight rules, and that was finalized just recently after starting in March. So it took up a lot of the year. You know, a lot of people say, what does council do exactly? And that was an issue that was no way on their agenda for 2019 that ended up taking up a lot of time.
Well, racism kind of ended out the year as well, particularly with the new city council, with accusations of white privilege dominating the new sworn-in city council meetings and a pledge to adopt a racial equity resolution.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's where I was going next, was that was unusual. Again, struggling with the racism topic, the council member pushed back after some citizens said they didn't want 2 white men serving as mayor and deputy mayor, even though they were the only 2 people who said they wanted those jobs. And I think a lot of that was an ineloquent, off-the-cuff remark by the council member who said she was sick of white men being lumped into this category of being bad people. And, you know, she noted that they were the people with the most experience. And I think, unfortunately, you know, that kind of tribalism that, of course, is coming from the highest office in the land, everybody's emotions are really raw, and people reacted to that so, you know, violently almost in their comments at public hearings. You know, they were just really upset about it. And again, as you said, it led to passage just a few weeks ago of the racial equity resolution, acknowledging the origin and impacts of historic and current racism in Boulder. And there was some skepticism about the resolution. 2 others of similar nature have passed in in 2001 and again in 2015. But it's an issue, obviously, that needs constant attention.
But I think what really exacerbated all of this was that the council member in question, Mirabai Nagel, who'd made those initial remarks, seemed to double down on it and really not take into account any of the, what I perceived to be very thoughtful comments that were coming from, well, we even had an editorial in the Daily Camera, but certainly at the comment period in the City Council meetings, really people asking, you know, we need to be reflective and to really, you know, take into account that there has been so much racism that continues to exist and is so pervasive. There did not seem to be a lot of self-reflection on the part of Councilmember Nagel. That seemed to exacerbate the whole thing.
I agree. There was, when the charges of white privilege were being bandied about, I do feel she failed to react appropriately. Yeah.
Well, aside from that, there were other things like vaping regulations,
yes.
Efforts at a city level to increase affordable housing for middle class folks. That was one of the ballot measures. What were some of the other things that you covered during 2019?
Well, I think, as you said, there was a temporary ban on e-scooters. There were issues of prairie dogs on open space, which seems to be an annual issue. And then I think, of course, we get back to homelessness, which is going to be an ongoing issue this year. I think we have they talked about having a year-round shelter in 2018, and that did not get council support. But we have several success stories from staff and council to council from both city and county staff members saying that the housing first approach is working and that they have housed over 100 people. But homeless advocates say that's taking too long. And in the meantime, the number of people experiencing homelessness who died in Boulder this year was more than double the number in 2018.
Of course, you brought us a report from that memorial, the vigil that took place just last weekend, and people really saying, how on earth are we living in this community that's probably one of the most affluent in the world, and people are dying on the streets because they don't have access to resources.
Right. And we say, you know, we saw this ruling come down last week that it's about the camping ban being overturned in Denver. But now Boulder argues that it has enough beds to house all of its homeless. And so that issue is not, Boulder would fight any kind of lawsuit against Boulder for that. But we'll see. I just feel like there's a lot of underlying angst about that issue, that people want to see more help for the homeless, and they don't know what to do about it, but they want City Council to address it even more.
Well, of course, homelessness is on the extreme end of the housing issue, but of course there are many people in some type of housing crisis, whether it's a search to afford affordable rent, to find affordable rent or even affordable housing to buy. I mean, housing is a major issue right here in, but not just the city of Boulder, but of course Boulder County.
Well, and as you mentioned, we did pass a proposal, a measure to try to help people with the city providing money to help them with a down payment for housing, a new program that has never existed before. So we'll see how, you know, that turns out, as well as, of course, the new opportunity zone, what happens with that. That didn't probably get as much attention because it's a very complicated measure to explain. But of course, it was a Trump administration proposal. And if you're not familiar with it, it allows for capital gains taxes to be deferred if those gains are used for real estate investment. Well, Boulder's got an opportunity zone that stretches from 55th and 28th Streets and from the Diagonal Highway and Arapahoe Avenue, includes the new Google campus. And a lot of people are like, saying, what, you know, where's the opportunity needed there? And a lot of people were worried, you know, that it's going to replace, again, mobile home parks, low-income housing. What is this opportunity really going to do? So I think we're going to see a lot more attention paid to that in 2020.
Well, as we wrap up, Roz, of course, we didn't even really touch on the municipalization that's been going on for many years.
Yes, exactly. I had that next, Maeve, that, we're going to see, as I said, more of that, because we saw it through the courts all this year, Boulder trying to recreate its own municipal opportunity here in Boulder, and for taxpayers have paid a lot of money to try to get the assets away from Xcel and go ahead and start a municipal utility. And, you know, the money just keeps flowing out, and Xcel obviously is dragging its feet. It would not like to see that happen. And so Boulder voters will probably get another chance. They voted on this twice now. They'll probably get another chance in 2021 to vote again to see if they really want to go forward with this. So there's going to be a lot of things to watch.
And as we have a different makeup now on Boulder City Council, do you think that's going to bring any changes?
Well, it's hard to say. Most of the folks have supported, at least in our interviews with them, most of them still supported municipalization. Others said, we'll wait and see where it goes. Boulder Council now kind of has a 5-4, I think, as far as people who are aligned with Plan Boulder, the more slow growth issues, and four council members who are more aligned with the business community's interests. At least that's how it's kind of played out, you know, and how we view it, I guess, in Boulder. Although we don't run on Democrat or Republican platforms for city council, you know, we don't do that, but you know, we'll see how that plays out as well.
Any other big stories you'd like to round out the report with?
Well, I think we're going to see more talk about the rollout of 5G cell technology. That has gotten some attention. And then the library district, whether Boulder is going to start. It's a library district where voters will be asked to approve new taxes for that because there's never enough money to fund the library. Boulder has a huge number of people who use the library, and at least a third of the people who use it are not from the city, and so there's an effort to find more funding, develop a new model to fund the library. I think that will be an issue.
So we'll be paying attention to those stories in 2020, and I know Ros Brown will be bringing us those reports. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maeve.
It is 20 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU.
How are you ringing in the roaring 20s? Whether staying in or rolling out, let KGNU provide the soundtrack in community fashion with our special New Year's Eve party mix, Tuesday, December 31st, featuring five of your favorite KGNU volunteer DJs. Enjoy upful celebratory tunes from across the spectrum of beats, 7 p.m. until the next decade in the spirit of collaboration. Tune in to KGNU's New Year's Eve party mix starting at 7 p.m.
Well, one of the big local stories in 2019 was the community opposition to the selection of Mark Kennedy as the president of the University of Colorado. Kennedy emerged as the sole finalist after a long search process. Well, this morning, the Colorado Independent has published an investigation into how CU regions passed over more experienced and prominent applicants when picking Kennedy as president. I spoke this morning with Susan Green, editor of the Colorado Independent and author of this new report.
The university promised all the applicants confidentiality, which is something that's sort of done in the corporate world. It is sometimes done in school districts and in universities. The media has a big problem with this because it really, and I think government watchdogs do as well, because it prevents us from actually scrutinizing how these decisions are made. So somebody leaked us, I think in October, a list of 30 applicants, and that had been whittled down from about 160. And it shows that, yeah, they passed over really, you know, prominent university presidents with much more experience running universities than Mark Kennedy, bigger universities, more complex universities than where he came from, University of North Dakota. And it also showed they passed over other prominent, you know, business leaders and political leaders, including Bill Ritter, which I actually had reported in May, but also Lieutenant Governor Donna Lynn, who has a bunch of academic experience at Columbia University, where she's been teaching for about 15 years. And business leaders, Kent Theory, Robert Engel, Bob Beaupre was on the list. And what's been going on now is the interesting thing about the sort of story behind the story is while I was trying to report this story and I was calling regents, they were upset that somebody leaked. And so they went on somewhat of a witch hunt for the leaker. And so they're calling for an investigation into who leaked this to us. And as I wrote in the story, at least the four Republican regents who are calling for that investigation seem much more concerned about, less concerned about whether it looks like politics influenced this process or, you know, whether the public is able to scrutinize their decision, and more interested in, you know, the leak of the actual document.
Well, to that end, from your investigation, from this list of candidates that were also under consideration, does it look like then that this was a political decision as opposed to a decision based on merit, given the calibre of some of the candidates that you've just outlined there? A former governor of the state of Colorado, Donna Lynn, who worked under former governor John Hickenlooper, who has herself a lot of experience. Was this more than a political decision as opposed to a decision based on the merit of the candidate?
You know, I'm not going to comment on that one way or another. I'm just going to tell you that the short list, so when they whittled the 30 people on the list that was leaked to me down to 11, I think 8 of them at least were Republicans. And then when they whittled that list down to 6, I believe 5 either were Republicans or, had been Republicans until they took over, jobs leading universities when they became unaffiliated. So I think those numbers, I think the readers can deduce what they need to from those numbers.
Take us back to the actual process of this, because Mark Kennedy, he was very controversial. There were a lot of very heated community meetings, people very concerned about his voting record when he was in Congress, people concerned about statements that he had made about inclusivity on college campuses and particularly around the LGBTQ community. But before Kennedy emerged as the sole finalist, I mean, what was the selection process at CU?
The process was people applied there was a search committee formed, and part of my story talks about the company that the Regents hired. It's called Wayless Partners. It's out of Alabama. So they hired a private search firm, which, by the way, many of the applicants interviewed in my story said they'd never heard of. And these are people who really actually have spent decades hiring major university positions. So they'd never heard of this search firm. And they were out recruiting people. So Mark Kennedy was actually recruited by that firm. And one of the consultants on that firm is a former University of Alabama chancellor who was involved in a sort of dark money controversy there involving spending University of Alabama money on a sort of dark money PAC that benefited Republicans. So they were out recruiting people. Some of the regents were recruiting people or nominating people. And in essence, there was a pool of about 160 people who were interested in the job. The selection committee that was formed by the regents, which consisted of people from the university, so from the 4 different campuses, a dean representative, a student representative, a staff representative, and I think a faculty representative, had sort of whittled this list down to 30. And let me actually back up. In addition to the university representatives, there were community representatives. And I think of the 7 community representatives, 5 were Republicans. I think that's the number. But so the vast majority of the community representatives were not just, Republicans, but also active political Republicans like Frank McNulty, former Speaker of the House, other very active sort of political operatives on that. And they whittled it down to 30, which was a pretty bipartisan list. But then they whittled that 30 down to 11. And then one of those 11 included actually one of the 11 was Heather Wilson, who was the Air Force Secretary at the time. She backed out because she got a job in Texas. So that was 10. And then they interviewed all 10, the selection committee, which also had 2 regents on it, by the way, Heidi Ganahl and Irene Griego, and recommended 6 for the regents to interview in person. And as I said, 5 of those 6 either were Republicans or had been before running universities and unaffiliating from any party.
Susan Green is the editor of the Colorado Independent. She's also the author of a new investigation just published this morning at coloradoindependent.com on how CU regions passed over more experienced and prominent applicants when selecting Mark Kennedy as the president of the university system. You can read more about that online at coloradoindependent.com. It is 8:29 and it's time now for the comment line.
Hi. At the end of the radio book club with the author of Sabrina and Karina was a discussion of gentrification as a Colorado community tragedy. As Utah Phillips says, the earth isn't dying, it is being killed, and those who are killing it have names and addresses. In the mid-90s, head of the Boulder Area Realtors Association, Ken Hotard, addressed our Boulder Community Alliance, which included two future city council members. Ken was quite candid and told us two things. One, his group wants a churning economy. By this he meant selling the same house over and over again at increasing prices to richer and richer people. If you think about it, that's the opposite of community, which requires some stability for people to get to know each other. A churning economy is the takeover of a community. And two, he told us that their money would beat our organization. And he was right. Ever since I learned about age 10 about communal ownership of land among American Indians, I've thought owning land should be banned. Otherwise, those without land eventually become slaves or serfs of those with it. And Jeff Bezos will rule us all.
And that is the comment line.